Naraduvacha. Narad said, Yena, by which, Eva, certainly, Arabhate, begins, Karma, fruitive activities, Tena, by that body, Eva, certainly, Amutra, in the next life, Tat, that, Puman, the living entity, Bhungte, enjoys, he, because, Avyavadhanena, without any change, Lingena, by the subtle body, Manasa, by the mind, Svayam, personally. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The great sage Narad continued, the living entity acts in a gross body in this life. The body is forced to act by the subtle body composed of mind, intelligence and ego. After the gross body is lost, the subtle body is still there to enjoy or suffer. Thus there is no change. Purport. The living entity has two kinds of body, the subtle body and the gross body. Actually, he enjoys through the subtle body, which is composed of mind, intelligence and ego. The gross body is the instrumental outer covering. When the gross body is lost or when it dies, the root of the gross body, the mind, intelligence and ego, continues and brings about another gross body. Although the gross body is apparently changed, the real root of the gross body, the subtle body of mind, intelligence and ego, is always there. The subtle body's activities, be they pious or impious, create another situation for the living entity to enjoy or suffer in the next gross body. Thus the subtle body continues, whereas the gross body changes one after another. Since modern scientists and philosophers are too materialistic, and since their knowledge is taken away by the illusory energy, they cannot explain how the gross body is changing. The materialistic philosopher, Darwin, has tried to study the changes of the gross body, but because he had no knowledge of either the subtle body or the soul, he could not clearly explain how the evolutionary process is going on. One may change the gross body, but he works in the subtle body. People cannot understand the activities of the subtle body, and consequently, they are bewildered as to how the action of one body affects another gross body. The activities of the subtle body are also guided by the super soul, as explained in Bhagavad Gita 15:15. Sarva shachaham riddhi shanivishto mata smriti jnanam apohanam cha. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Super Soul is always guiding the individual soul. The individual soul always knows how to act according to the reactions of his past karma. In other words, the Super Soul reminds him to act in such a way. Therefore, although there is apparently a change in the gross body, there is a continuation between the lives of an individual soul. Pravadaki Mukham Kardi Bachalam Pangam Langate Girim Jatkripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam Bancha Kavatur Vishta Kripa Sindhu Puditanam Pavanebo Vaishnavibu Namonam. A very important question, philosophical question, is addressed in this sloka and purport. It's the philosophical question of suffering, why we suffer in this world. You see, the Dharamena Hina Pashubi Shalanam, the animals and lower living entities, they never discuss this. Because they're so gross, they're so covered over by the modes of nature. You never see the dogs on the street having a discussion of why are we suffering and how can we improve our situation. You never see horses discussing that. You never see cows discussing this. Because actually they're so covered over that they're not so sensitive to the suffering, actually. They're kind of dull. Consciousness is dull. But you see, all when one reaches the human form of life, then naturally, atato brahma jigyasa. You see, then we begin to inquire that about our situation and the cause and the goal and the purpose and the reason for suffering. So this is a question not that is, you see, in all civilization. The cause of suffering. Now here is the answer, it is explained. Because as Prabhupada says in the purport here, modern scientists and philosophers are too materialistic. And since their knowledge is taken away by illusory energy, they cannot explain this question of suffering and how the body is changing. And definitely they cannot understand that, as is here explained, the subtle body's activities, be they pious or impious, create another situation for the living entity to enjoy or suffer in the next gross body. Thus, Prabhupada says that the suffering is experienced in another body. Where is that? Oh, yeah. The subtle body's activities, be pious or impious, create another situation for the living entity to enjoy or suffer in the next gross body. So this is the scientific explanation. You see, the materialistic scientists and philosophers, they cannot explain how is it. It seems unfair. It's unfair that simply by chance somebody is born in, you know, the dry, parched, barren deserts of Africa in a grass hut, is born there, and they have no facility, they have no drinking water, they have no comforts in life, and there's so much disease, and the average, you know, duration of life is very short, and they have to suffer so much, and they die with so much disease, and they have to struggle so much. Or someone is born in Bangladesh, in Dhaka, and they have to live in a house with 30 people in two rooms, and every day he has to go out and work on a rickshaw all day and struggle in a pouring rain, in a steaming heat, and so much disease and malaria and dysentery and dengue fever, and he gets 30, 40 rupees a day and struggles in this way, can only afford a gumsha. Two gumshas. Or you see the people, you come into Bombay, you fly in, you see all these people living under blue. You see all from the aeroplane, you see all the blue. See blue, 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 blue. It's all this plastic, you know, this cheap blue plastic that people build house out of. In Bangladesh, somebody buys a fridge, you know, some wealthy man buys a fridge. And so they send a fridge in a box, a big cardboard box. Now in the Western countries they throw away the box. But in Bangladesh the people that transport, deliver the fridge, they take the box, then they go and sell the cardboard box. They sell the cardboard box and someone will buy that and make a house. Get some plastic, some cardboard box on the side of the railroad, they make a house, isn't it? I live. So this is the standard of life. And then somebody else born in Europe, Germany, or UK or US, and born in a big house and has a whole special room they call the bedroom. It's just for sleeping. A whole separate room just to go and lie, big bed, big sheets, big curtain, big window, ensuite bathroom. Big separate bedroom that's just for sleeping. And then living room, house, you know, is two cars, three cars and the garage. He goes to the best schools. You know, the American people, the biggest disease is heart disease and obesity. And there's a big industry making the coffins because the American men are so fat. They have to make big coffin, you know, the wooden box. And they can't fit in the economy seat on the airplane. They have to have two seats. They're so big, fat. So they waste so much food. So, is this fair? What's the reason? Is this by chance or bad luck? You have to struggle all day in the heat, in the insects, in the cockroaches, and just eat some rice and dal. And somebody else can, you know, has such opulent, comfortable life. And what's the cause? What's the reason? What's this? What's the cause of that? Oh, that's just bad luck. Unless you understand this philosophy, that's the answer. It's just bad luck. It's just there's no reason. Or else people, you know, they say that there is a God, but he created in the beginning. He was quite competent. And he created the world. But now if you go to Italy, you go to the Sistine Chapel, you see the picture of God on the ceiling. He's an old man. He has a beard, grey hair. And now because he's got old, then he's become a little incompetent. Before, everything was well organized and there was no trouble. But now he's got old, so he can't manage everything so well. So that's why, you know, some people have to suffer. Either that, or else he likes watching you suffer. You see, this is the question. If he's the supreme controller, then why is he so unfair? If he's controlling everything and nothing happens without his control, then why is he so unfair that he makes somebody suffer like that for no reason and someone else enjoy so much comfort? So that's why now in the modern world, the most of the educated people are atheists. Because they can't understand such a God. So better there is no God. And it's just, you know, it's just the chemical combinations and it's just all by chance. And let's just try to do some good for the suffering people. And that's about all we can do. And, you know, forget the discussion. So these are the alternatives that you have. Either God is a masochist, you know, he likes to randomly make people suffer. Or else there is no God. Otherwise, there's no explanation why... There's not fair, you know, people are handicapped from their birth. And there's not equality in the sharing of resources and the opportunities for material happiness. So this is the answer. Prabhupada gives some very significant teachings in this purport. He says here that actually he enjoys through the subtle body. It's the subtle body which is actually enjoying and suffering. So even though the gross body is changing and it appears to be no connection or no link between the previous activities, but still it's the same person and he's the same situation, the same, you could say, criminal or defendant, and he's simply going on now, even though his body's changed completely. He's simply going and suffering or enjoying the reactions of the activities that he performed as the subtle body when it was encased in a previous body. So therefore Narada is saying here that avya, there is no change. But the material energy, Prabhupada says in Maya, aparita gyan. That their knowledge is aparita, means stolen, taken away by Maya. So they only see the immediate body. And they don't see what went on before that. And in that way they can't give an explanation to the apparently unfair or the unjust or unbalanced sufferings and happiness that we're enjoying in this world. So actually the Bhagavatam is the answer to all the philosophical inquiries. Kalo nasta drishamesha puronak aruno ditaha. That the blind persons in this Kali Yuga who are blind by the influence of Kali Yuga, Purana Aruno Utita, will get light from this Purana, which by studying and carefully reading explains all of the questions of our existence and gives the appropriate answer. So this is a fact, as is established by Narad Muni and Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita. Purusha Prakriti Shtohi Bhunkte Prakriti Jangunan Karanam Guna Sango Asyad Sadasadyoni Janmashu. Krishna explains that the cause of the sad and asad, the cause of happiness and distress in the various lives, Yoni Janmashu in this world, the cause, Krishna says, Karanam Guna Sanga. The cause of it is the association of the subtle body with the modes of material nature. Bhunkte Prakriti Jan Gunan. This living entity, his position, Purusha Prakriti Shto, his position in this material world is that Bhunkte Gunan. He's enjoying the modes of material nature. That's what it's all about in this material world. It's from one to the other. Sometimes in the mode of goodness, we're enjoying being clean, being regulated, being austere, being honest, being truthful, being selfless. We're enjoying that sometimes. Other times we're enjoying being fruitive, profit, let me collect, let me get more, let me increase, let me improve. We're enjoying the mode of passion. And then other times the mode of ignorance. I don't care, it doesn't matter, there's no problem, there's no worries, just forget about it. And this way the living entity, he wanders through the different, and associates through the different modes of material nature. Bhunkte Gunan. That's called Bhunkte Gunan. He enjoys the modes, which are Prakriti Jan, which are produced from the Prakriti. And that's what attracts us to this material world. That's why we come back again and again. Because the subtle body experiences the different opportunities of happiness that the modes can, by combining together, offer. Sometimes I'm a good man, I'm giving charity, I'm helping others, I'm enjoying the mode of goodness, selflessness, I'm learning. I'm thinking, all of this enjoyment, subtle enjoyment. And then profit, oh look, I'm increasing, I have so much, I'm so powerful, I'm so influential, we're enjoying Rajaguna or Tamaguna. I'm dreaming, this is it. This is all the material world has to offer. You just simply one situation or one experience to another of a product of the modes combining together, and we taste that, we enjoy that, Bhunkte. Now, that's fine, and the materialists, they say, you can enjoy, you know, your service to God and your religion and everything, but what's wrong with me enjoying, actually, you know, what's wrong with that? I mean, what's wrong with being happy and enjoying in this world? I'm happy, so don't disturb me. That's fine. It's a fact. There is happiness in the mode of goodness. There is happiness in the mode of passion. There is happiness in the mode of ignorance. Krishna analyzes that in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Undeniably, it's happiness. And you're enjoying, you're happy. There's no argument. However, Krishna explains that Karanam Guna Sangha. You don't realize that because of that association with the modes, Karanam Guna Sangha, then Sad Asad, Yoni Janmashu. You'll be forced to accept gross body after gross body and pay or endure the reactions to all of the experiences, all of the enjoyment that you took as a result of associating with these modes. Karanam Guna Sangha Sadasad Yoni Janmashu. Because of that association with the modes, you will get a allotment of happiness and distress birth after birth. So Prabhupada simplifies that philosophical explanation by Krishna here. When he's explaining that actually it's the subtle body that enjoys. It's very scientific. And this explains so much phenomena that we see in this world. And our Prabhupada also explains, he quotes some, the 15th chapter, that Matar, Smriti Gyanam Apohanam Cha. Actually, Krishna facilitates this. Krishna helps the living entity on this path. Matar, from me, Matar Smriti Gyanam Apohanam Cha. Krishna says that, Riddhi Sannivishta, I'm accompanying every wandering living entity as he's trying all of these different opportunities that the three modes can provide. He's enjoying one after another. I'm accompanying him, observing, Upadrasta, overseeing, Anumanta, permitting, allowing him to enjoy all that, facilitating it, actually providing that material facility for his enjoyment. My, Mama Maya Dara is my material energy that he's enjoying, that I'm providing for him to enjoy. And Mata Smriti, I'm giving him the memory to try to continue to fulfill the desires that were unfulfilled in his previous gross body. So that's why we see right from the very early age in life that the conditioned soul, they have an inclination to a particular type of enjoyment. It's because Krishna is reminding them of their previous the activities of the previous in the same subtle body in the previous gross body, and Krishna is reminding you, and we see immediately that the inclination to a particular type of sense gratification is manifest from an early stage in the conditioned soul's life. Prabhupada commented one time that this Ravi Shankar, Sitar Panditji, Ravi Shankar, Prabhupada commented one time, for seven births, he's been studying sitar and perfecting. He's enjoying. It's the same person, subtle body. Life after life, he's getting better and better. And probably he'll take more births. He said about the Beatles, he said to John Lennon, he said in the previous birth, they were Arya Samajis. They were in the Karma Kanda, and they were pious, and they were artists, and they were creative, and because of their piety, they got birth in the affluent country and got so much wealth, and they continued with their music and creativity. So, Mata Smriti, Krishna is reminding us again. You see, in a school, and the children, they're inclined to a certain type of enjoyment. And Krishna reminds them. Not only does he remind us, Mata Smriti Gyanam, he gives us the intelligence how to fulfill those desires, and Mata Smriti Gyanam Apohanam, he gives a forgetfulness. We may wonder, well, what role does forgetfulness play? Well, this is Krishna's special mercy, that he's so kind that He gives a forgetfulness so that you can forget all of the frustration and dissatisfaction and anger and all of the pain that you experienced in the subtle body in the previous life as a result of trying to fulfill those desires. We were frustrated. We were unfulfilled. We were unsatisfied. But if we remembered that, life after life, then we wouldn't be inclined again to take up the pursuit of fulfilling our desires. And because we would know. Could you imagine, just to give you a more graphic example, if you remembered all your previous births, you remembered all your previous marriages. You remembered all your previous marriages. Do you think you'd be inclined to get married again? So Krishna is very kind. He makes you forget, so that in this birth you have like a fresh conception. And yes, it's very attractive. Yes, this is very alluring. Yes, this is very pleasant. Yes, durashaya. This is called durashaya. Prahlad Maharaj explained durashaya. It's asha. Asha is desire, but it's durashaya. It will never be fulfilled. It's always at a distance. Durashaya. Yay, bahir ata manina. They're considering that the external energy is very important and their desires are durashaya. They will never be fulfilled. But Krishna, he helps us forget the previous endeavors to enjoy in this world so that we can get inspired and have the hope. Durashaya, that means we're hoping. Prabhupada says hope against hope. We're still hoping that we will achieve that desire. It will be fulfilled. I have the confidence. I will fulfill my desires. But they're never fulfilled. Yeah, and we waste the whole life trying to fulfill them, and in the end, unsatisfied, give up this gross body. So this is special, Krishna's special kindness. We want to forget him. We want to be happy in this world, so he gives us all the facility, life after life. So this is very interesting for us, the relevance of this. Even we forget that actually enjoyment is on the subtle plane, and like Prahlad explains, Bahir Atamanina, we think that it's all about the senses and sense gratification. Most materialists think like that, and also even aspiring transcendentalists, we still have faith in the gross contact of the senses with their objects. We still enjoy. But actually, if we understand that real enjoyment is on the subtle platform, that jnana is very conducive to spiritual life, because it helps us practice renunciation from sense gratification, which is illusory enjoyment. But from our own experience, we can analyze. Just like in Mumbai, you have metro train under the ground, you have metro. In Calcutta, we have metro. So you get on the, as you're getting on the metro train, doors open, everyone running. Immediately you see empty chair. There's empty chair on the metro. So immediately you're happy, you're elated. Aha! Empty chair. You take that empty chair and you sit down. And now, is it actually that empty chair which is giving us happiness? If that's the case, then you can unscrew that chair and take it home with you. You take it home, you're carrying it. Oh, here's the empty chair. It's the source of so much happiness. So take it with you everywhere. Well, I was coming in the plane, Indigo flight. It was half empty. And I came in and I thought, so many empty chairs. I was so happy. Ah, no one crowding next to me. I can lie down on three chairs and take rest. I'm thinking these chairs, they're so giving me so much happiness. But the Indigo sales people, when they come in the plane, they see all the empty chairs. How do they feel? Oh, we're losing so much money. So I'm seeing the empty chair, and I'm thinking, oh, so much happiness. And they're seeing the same empty chair, and they're thinking, oh, so much pain, we're losing so much money. So actually the chair is not giving us happiness or pleasure, it's all in the mind. Kandutivan manasijam vishaheta dhira. Prahlad explains, all of these happiness and distress, it actually manasijam, it's born on the mind, it's born from the mind, it's produced from the mind. Actually, it doesn't exist in these things. Or another thing you see, I guess it happens in this. I like the train analogies, because everybody uses the train. So the train is coming into the station, and everybody is pushing to get on. You see, they're all pushing, to get on the. I want the train. I want the seat. But the people who are on the train, they're all pushing to get off. He wants to get off the train. I want to go. The other guy, he wants to get on the train. I want the train. The train. It's all in the mind. The train, getting on the train is not going to give you happiness. Getting off the train is not going to give you happiness. But this is the way the Bahirata Manina, we're thinking everything relies on the external energy and manipulating it. This is the foolishness of the conditioned soul. But actually enjoyment is on the subtle plane. And that's why internet is so popular. The internet, people become addicted. They call it surfing the internet. You know that word surfing? It means you ride the waves. Here, Juhu Beach, your waves, you're surfing. So on the internet, because it's all on the subtle platform. You can sit there for hours and you're going here, you're looking at this hotel, you're looking at these products, you're looking at this website, this news. Well, who's going? Your gross body is going? You're enjoying? No, it's all on the mind. The mind is surfing. The mind is going everywhere. That's why people become addicted. Because actually, enjoyment on the subtle platform is, you could say, more liberal or less restricted than enjoyment on the gross platform. That's how advertising works. Because they advertise the products and you see the images. Like if you're searching internet for different computers, and they show like, you know, like pictures. And you look at it and it's like from this angle and it's opened up and it's all nice and pristine and all you know, like fresh and new and all the angles. They take the photos. And then you buy the computer and the gross thing actually doesn't look quite nearly as good as it did, you know, in the photos. So or you're planning some holiday. Oh, and you see the pictures of the resort, and there's all palm trees and beaches and comfortable. Or even if you're traveling, they advertise hotel, you know, and they show pictures of the rooms. And you think, wow, looks like a pretty good hotel. But when you go there, you see 30% of what it looked like on the advertisement. So actually on the subtle platform, there's less, you know, disappointment. That's why we become, you know. But when you get to the actual reality of the thing, then we're always so disappointed. That's why actually it's the dreaming stage. It's the contemplation stage. It's the meditation stage. That's where actually the enjoyment is experienced. Thinking about the thing. That's how advertising works. Gets you thinking about products and meditating on them. And you're enjoying them. You're already selecting which one you'll buy. It's all going on in your mind. Enjoying. When you actually get the product, you're disappointed. So this is what, therefore, Prabhupada said here, another really powerful statement. He says that the gross body apparently changes. The real root of the gross body is the subtle body. So this is how it works. It's on this subtle level. This is the root of our attachment to this world. And that's why it's so difficult to give up, because same subtle body, life after life, is attached to enjoying the same things. And very, very powerful. So this is our process, this process of Krishna consciousness. We have to purify the subtle body. And not remain, because as long as the subtle body remains attracted to enjoying the modes of material nature, then we're forced, in the verse, Narada says here, he says, that the living entity acts, he says, the body is forced to act by the subtle body. That's the second line in Sanskrit. Yena avarabhyate karma. That by that, yena means by that, by the subtle body, avarabhyate is meaning beginning karma. In other words, all of our impetus to act in the material world, in the material body, is forced by the condition of the subtle body. So we have to purify our process, and that's what causes us to achieve body after body. Like Krishna gives an analogy, what is that? Shariram yadavatnati yakshapi utkrama tishtaraha vayurugandan ivashayat. Like the air which carries different aromas, sometimes the rubbish, sometimes the fragrance, or in Bengal now you get the aroma of jackfruit and mangoes. In the market, the aroma, mangoes, oh, fresh mangoes. Here you get a mango, you smell in the market, mangoes. So the air carries the aroma, and sometimes the garbage, you know, the rotten things where the crows hang out. So the air carries these different aromas. So in the same way, the consciousness or the subtle body carries these different conceptions of life. And shrotnam chakshushpashanam cha rasanam grahane vacha. Adishtaya manashchayam vishayen upashevayat. One acquires a certain type of srotram, is the ear, chakshu, the eye, rasanam is the tongue, granam is the nose, spashanam, sense of touch, adishtaya manashchayam, which are all grouped around the mind, which is in the subtle body, vishayan upashevayat. And in that way he enjoys material body, material vishayan, material sense objects. It's all based on the conceptions of the subtle body. So this is the key. This is the root of our conditioning. And it's also the platform of our freedom. What is that? Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshaya. For man, mind is the cause of bondage and liberation. Bandhaya vishaya shango. That the mind which is meditating on the objects of sense gratification is the cause of bondage. Muktai niri vishayam manaha. And the mind, which is free from attraction to the sense objects, nidavishayam, that is the cause of one's liberation. So we have to purify the mind. And that's what Krishna consciousness is all about, purifying the subtle body, mind, intelligence and ego. Ego, the ahankar, false ego, becomes the real ego. What is that? Dasosmi. Who am I? I'm not this body. I am Nitya Krishna Das, the eternal servant of Krishna. I have to purify the ego. I am. Aham Brahmasmi, Nitya Krishna Das. I am the eternal servant of Krishna. And purify the intelligence by hearing Krishna philosophy. And purify the mind. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anushmara. Manmana. Think of Krishna. Become Krishna conscious. And this way the activities of Krishna consciousness purify the subtle body. So much so that when we're completely purified, then the gross body becomes pure. In the same way Prabhupada said, this conditioned subtle existence is the root cause of a gross material body. So in the same way, the root cause of a spiritual body is a Krishna conscious mind, intelligence and ego. So by purifying the mind, by purifying the consciousness, by making it Krishna conscious, then we develop a spiritual body. Karmana manasa gira nikalashvabi abhashtasya jivan mukta sa uchite. We become liberated, even in this apparent gross body. So these are the teachings that Sri Narad is so eloquently explaining to King Prachinabhahishad here in Srimad Bhagavatam. Now today is an interesting day. It's the... We'd like to speak a little bit about, because this is our tradition in the Vaishnav Sampradaya, to glorify and appreciate the activities of great Vaishnavas on their appearance and disappearance days. So today is the Vyasa Puja, the appearance day of Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj. So I'd like to just share with you a few comments of appreciation about Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, whose Vyasa Puja is today. So here's a letter from Prabhupada in 1975, which was written from here in Juhu, Bombay, 1975. Prabhupada's writing to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who was in the US. The Bombay Temple progress construction is now begun. It was started by you. It is a very nice project. The temple is very large and magnificent, and there are so many facilities for guests. Restaurant, theatre. So I am remaining here to see that the temple construction is completed. So here's Prabhupada accrediting the beginning of the Juhu project to Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So very appropriate that we speak a little bit about him today. When we look at the history of ISKCON and the contribution that Prabhupada made to our Sampradaya, actually we cannot separate the role of Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj from Prabhupada's Leela. You can search through the commentary, the histories and the biographies of Srila Prabhupada, and you will see that there's probably no other devotee that spent as much time, personal association with Srila Prabhupada as Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And we saw that he was so significant in establishing the main features of ISKCON as we know it today, just like in 68-69 Los Angeles, USA was the international headquarters of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Prabhupada stayed there a lot, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he made the president of Los Angeles. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj established the Nam Sankirtan program. Actually, that was his idea to take devotees out and do Sankirtan on the streets. And he conceptualized the whole program of devotees' street Sankirtan. And Prabhupada very much encouraged his ingenuity and creativity. He also established the book sale, back to Godhead selling program. Originally, devotees would go and do chanting on the street, and they would like do bhiksha, collect. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj got the idea, why don't we take back to Godhead magazines and distribute and sell, get donations. So he started the Brihat Madanga, the book distribution program. And Prabhupada very much appreciated his creativity and ingenuity in this area, his inspiration. And then sometime in the early 70s, after Prabhupada was first concentrating in the West, from 66, 67, 68 up to 70, 71, then Prabhupada spent more time and more attention on developing the projects in India, which were specifically here, Juhu, and Vrindavan and Mayapur. And who did he make the GBC for India? Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And he entrusted him with the responsibilities of all India development. He was the GBC here in Juhu. And Giriraj Maharaj was the president. And here's a little comment that we'll share with you from which I got from His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, who was speaking about Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Tamal Krishna Maharaj also was very instrumental in acquiring and keeping this Juhu land. And he was there also with Giriraj Swami and other senior devotees in the early days. And going to the lawyers every day, he was memorizing the civic code instead of the Bhagavad Gita and so forth. And he was giving so much, he was spending the whole day in courts with the lawyers and the officers, as you know, the great epic battle of securing the land and the project here in Juhu took many years. So he was very much involved in that battle. He was spending the whole day in courts with the lawyers and officers and civic officers and speaking to one officer and another. And he came to Srila Prabhupada at that time. He was very frustrated and feeling confused and needing some shelter. He said, "It's too much for me. I can't bear it. I memorized all the civic codes and I don't know the Bhagavad Gita. It's too much." And Prabhupada pressed him. Prabhupada said, This management is spiritual. And you must do it." So all glories to those who are carrying on in his footsteps and managing this nice project. This is spiritual management. So then after 4 years as GBC in India and establishing these projects in Vrindavan, Mayapur and here in Juhu, Tamal Krishna Maharaj left that responsibility of GBC in India and returned to the US and established at that time book distribution was developing more and more in the West. So he was attracted to that field and he established the Radha Damodar Sankirtan program, which was a program of many, many greyhound buses. They're big, big buses full of brahmacharis traveling all over the United States distributing big books. These Bhagavatams, Bhagavad Gita's hard books. So this Radha Damodar traveling Sankirtan party, they became the world leaders of big book distribution. All under the inspiration and management of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And so many we see, in all the, we could see when we analyze all of the major projects of Prabhupada and the major concerns of Prabhupada, Tamal Krishna Maharaj took a huge responsibility and a role in leadership and development. So we can actually analyze, and historians will analyze, that ISKCON as we know it today, so much of it is contributed to the contribution. We can contribute ISKCON as we know it today. We can contribute so much of its establishment to the selfless service and surrender of His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Another couple of incidents. One deity of Krishna appeared to him on Juhu Beach here. A very remarkable lila. The Lord appeared to him. So many. There were thousands of people on the beach. It was Nrisimha Chaturdasi Day. Thousands of people on the beach, 6 o'clock in the morning, and Maharaj caught in his eye a shimmer just at the edge of the ocean where meeting the sand. And he went, "What is that shining little shimmer?" He went over and he could just see the mukut, the crown of the deity, was just a little bit coming out of the sand. And clean out, they saw, "Oh, Krishna has appeared." He began worshipping that deity of Gopinath. And hearing about that, the Maharaj of Udaipur, which is the state in which the Srinathji deity is located, he heard about the appearance of this Gopinath deity to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he arranged for a deity of Srimati Radharani to be sent to accompany that Gopinath deity, which is worshipped by Maharaj. Here's another little story I'll send with you showing some of the special mercy that Tamal Krishna Maharaj got from Srila Prabhupada. This is a story. Shortly after taking sannyas, of course his sannyas lila is glorious. It's nice to remember that for all of those who are aspiring to take sannyas. He left his wife for a few weeks preaching tour. Never came back. Went to Jaipur with Prabhupada and took sannyas. Never came back. It was glorious. And he maintained his sannyas for so many years, 20, 30 years. So just after taking sannyas, Maharaj was on a program that Prabhupada was busy here in Juhu. At that time, we just acquired the land. This was He took sannyas in 72. We acquired this property in December 71. So Prabhupada was staying here. I expect that was in the apartments that were in the back previously where Prabhupada's rooms were before we built here. So shortly after taking sannyas in India, I had returned from my first preaching assignment, filling an invitation Prabhupada had received so he could go to Africa. I was travelling from Ahmedabad to Madras with a change of trains in Mumbai. And although Prabhupada was staying at the Mumbai temple, I had remained at the train station, strictly observing the etiquette that I should not again see my former wife, who at the time was residing here at the temple in Juhu. But in his eagerness to hear the report of his emissary, Prabhupada had pushed aside such etiquette and summoned me to be present. Tamal Krishnamurti is speaking. When I arrived, he made the unusual gesture of asking the devotees to leave the room, something he rarely did. When we were alone together, he heard with rapt attention as I communicated the success of our Ahmedabad mission. But the time was short if I was still to make the train. I begged to be excused that I might leave for Madras to make preparation for Prabhupada's arrival. Prabhupada had a program there in Madras and Maharaj was going to prepare it. After I offered my obeisances, His Divine Grace stood up and moving around his desk, he came over and embraced me affectionately in his arms, pressing his head against mine, first on one side and then the other. And Prabhupada whispered, "Krishna is in your heart. Go and preach." Prabhupada ki. So we see it's very rare that such a Mahabhagavat Acharya, an exalted Acharya like Prabhupada. I mean, very rarely did Prabhupada embrace any disciple. It's not really the etiquette. But considering the special service and qualification of Srila Tamal Krishnamurti, Prabhupada embraced him and empowered him with his vapu. Empowered him and said, gave him the blessing, "Krishna is in your heart." So this is glorious. Today is his appearance day. So as is the tradition of our Sampradaya on the appearance and disappearance days of our great Acharyas, we appreciate their contribution and their preaching and their example of surrender to Guru. So undoubtedly His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj is very dear to Srila Prabhupada and he's very dear to C.C. Radha Rasa Bihari. So today we're seeking his blessing that we can also become surrendered to Prabhupada's mission and desire and dedicate our lives to fulfill the desire of Prabhupada like Tamal Krishna Maharaj did and dedicate our lives to the perpetuating the service of Sisi Radha Rasa Bihari. With his blessings that will be possible. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj ki. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.